Well, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Another hour to go here with our guest, Dr. Robert Bartholomew. We'll take your phone calls. I still have many questions to ask him about ghosts and hauntings, Bigfoot. Wait till we get into bizarre behaviors when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Robert Bartholomew with us. His website, by the way, is his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. A couple of his books out there, American Hauntings, Mass Hysteria in Schools, The Martians Have Landed. We'll talk about some of those. Doctor, bizarre behaviors. Tell me about the guy who thought he was a cat.
Yeah, that's a strange one. Can I just say, George, that to finish that other story, when I confronted the Department of Health in Massachusetts about that, they said, oh, and they spent tens of thousands of dollars on a study. They said, oh, the purpose of the study wasn't to find a cause. And I'm like, well, what was the purpose of the study then?
Exactly.
To find a cause? So in the course of doing research, especially Fortean research after Charles Fort, you come across, you know, thousands of clippings over the years and unusual stories. But there's one story that tops them all, and it was this man who thought he was a cat. And I came across this in an unusual way. I saw it in the Journal of Nervous and Mental Disease. It's a well-known, respected journal. It's been going for over 100 years. And one of the guys involved was a Harvard psychiatrist. So this is a very reputable case. And if it hadn't been, I might not have believed it. It was so bizarre, it's just unbelievable. So one day, the 17-year-old boy walks into the psychiatrist's office. It sounds like a joke, a guy walks into a bar. Well, this yeah. guy walks into a psychiatrist's office, and he was complaining of depression. And during the session, he just made this passing remark that since early adolescence, he had led a secret life as a cat. And the guy's like, what? And the most amazing thing about this is that he had managed to keep this secret from everybody outside of his immediate family. And he seemed to present normally and had a relatively normal life outside of the family. He admitted that as a child, he felt closer to his family's pet cat, Tiffany, than to his own parents. And if you look at the case history here that they were writing up, it makes sense because his childhood was very unusual. His parents often tied him to a tree in the backyard, and he grew angry at his parents.
I guess so.
And the psychiatrist said that he identified with his pet cat, Tiffany, and it's kind of abnormal psychology here. He fell in love with Tiffany and came to believe that he was a cat and thought that he could speak cat. And he looked at Tiffany as his surrogate parents. Now, George, what he reported next is so remarkable that I'm going to just quote from it from the journal article.
Okay.
Okay? You can't make this up. When alone, he began to regularly hunt with cats, to eat small prey and raw meat, to have blank, blank activity with cats and serial relationships, and to converse with them by meowing and making feline gestures. He reports that the activities have been continuous and are not confined to his bouts of depression. He also told of paying frequent visits to zoos to see the tigers, where he attempted to talk to them in, quote, tiger language, and to collect loose fur. By age 17, he reported coming to the realization that he was actually a tiger cat due to his affinity for tigers and his large build. It was at this time that he began to confide in his friends and the psychiatrist of his secret cat identity. He said that Tiffany had encouraged him to come out of the closet with his human friends. You can't make that up.
Bizarre.
And the guy at the end of the report said in an update that he was living, he was on medication, he was on antidepressants, and was living with a couple of flatmates a relatively normal life outside of when he was back at the house. He had these cat fantasies, and he did have a pet cat.
Did he have a litter box for himself?
I don't know. That's a great question.
I bet he did.
He probably did out in the backyard somewhere.
Jeez.
You walk into your local Walmart and you walk out of there with like 10 pounds of cat litter or something.
For himself,
yeah. A lot of cat litter.
Oh my God. I bet he did. He probably had something in the basement too or something. Who knows? Weird. Well, is he still alive?
I don't know. They've just left it as that. And, of course, they didn't give the guy's name out for obvious reasons.
That is strange.
You know, a few years ago, there was a guy that used to, I remember I used to see him on TV. He actually had, like, facial surgeries and implants and made himself look like a cat. This wouldn't be the same guy. But, yeah, there is some fascinating behaviors out there that, yeah, I just find it interesting as a sociologist. Whether things are real or not real, I always say to people, it's interesting getting a call at 2 in the morning with somebody claiming they've seen a UFO or had a Bigfoot encounter or seen a ghost. It's just darn fun and interesting, and that's why I like to investigate cases totally aside from reality or not, but certainly I would say that 90% of people who claim to have seen UFOs, who claim to have seen Bigfoot, or have had a variety of paranormal experiences are honest, sincere people trying to make sense of something they don't understand.
I agree with that. And we're going to get into Bigfoot and some of the ghost hauntings. You wrote an incredible book called American Hauntings as well. But I want to ask you, and then we'll get to our calls too, but I want to ask you about mass hysteria. Give us, first of all, your definition of what that is.
Well, it's the rapid spread of illness symptoms for which there's no organic bodily cause. You feel sick, but there's nothing wrong with you. Like I'd alluded to before, it's the placebo effect in reverse. We know that if you're given a sugar pill, that often you'll feel better.
Yeah.
Well, it also works in reverse. If you think you eat something, I remember working at a school once in near Rutland, Vermont, and this was late in the school year. The principal called the staff together and said that one of the teachers had been drinking their coffee and they left it for a while and came back and then took a sip and didn't feel well, and they were wondering if anybody had seen anyone slip something into the coffee. And I just thought to myself, it's time to retire.
Yeah, exactly. When something like that happens, and they talk about that. Now, is mass hysteria always centered around an illness? Could it be something else, panic or something?
Sometimes you get an overlap, and then you've got social panic. Social panics are situations where you get something like. Right now you could say that the fear of Muslims is a social panic. Last year in America, 23 people were killed by cows, either being squashed by cows or trampled by cows or kicked by cows. Far fewer people were killed by Islamic terrorists in the United States in terms of who just came there to engage in terrorist activities. Mm-hmm. It's usually homegrown or people have been radicalized once they get to the country. And what I'm trying to do is show that there are terrorists out there and they commit bad crimes, but it gets exaggerated, the threat. You're far more likely to die from falling out of bed in the middle of the night than to be killed by a terrorist in America.
Well, I was going to say more people get killed by something falling out of a window, hitting them on the head, than these kinds of situations. It's bizarre. You wrote a book called American Hauntings, and you've looked at different cases. Do you believe in ghosts yourself, or have you ever seen one?
Well, I always say there are ghosts. People report seeing ghosts, so there are ghosts. The question is, what are ghosts? And we have to be very careful, because I want to believe in ghosts, because to to me, it could be proof of life after death. So I hope that ghosts are real. But I have kind of a vested interest, so I have to be very careful because I want so much to believe that there are ghosts as spirits of people who have been alive. But certainly, there are ghosts. The question is, what are they? And I always say that if ghosts are real as spirits of the dead, then why don't people see naked ghosts? Why is it always or almost always with clothing,
mm-hmm.
if that's the human spirit? But look, I want to believe, and I'm sure, like, if you look at surveys, at least a third of people around the world, surveys over and over again, show that people report seeing ghosts. So there's no question that they exist. The question is, what actually is going on? Is it something from their subconscious that's being projected? Or is it actually the spirit of someone who is deceased? And at this point, I don't see any hard evidence that it's spirits of the deceased. I know that makes people upset because they have...
And you're not saying it doesn't exist. You're not saying that.
Yeah, and I know it makes people upset because to them it's real. I mean, if somebody reports being abducted by a space alien, then to them it happened. Now, maybe I have no doubt there's extraterrestrial life in the universe. The question is, have they contacted Earth? And have they abducted people?
Robert, let me tell you a quick story which will echo what you've just said. Back in 1971, I'm a 21-year-old radio reporter in Detroit, and the big story, of course, ongoing, was the Barney and Betty Hill abduction case. I'm sure you're familiar with that. The couple from New Hampshire. And they went to a psychiatrist named Dr. Benjamin Simon, who was a great psychiatrist out of Boston, and I had a chance to interview him. You know, I'm 21 years old, but I'm interested in that stuff. So I interviewed him and asked him a specific question: if Barney and Betty Hill, whom he hypnotized separately, and they both told the same story, if they were telling the truth or lying. And his answer was, whatever happened to them, they believe they're telling the truth. I don't know, George, what happened. I have no idea if they got abducted by aliens and put in a ship. I have no idea. But they believe that happened to them, and they're not lying. And that was remarkable to me, Robert.
And that book was a great book, John G. Fuller's The Interrupted Journey.
That's right.
Of that case. And it was made into a TV movie.
That's right. And
I have to say the acting wasn't that great in that TV movie, but
I think James Earl Jones was in that, wasn't he?
You know, I can't remember.
He's the guy who played the voice of Darth Vader.
The special effects have come a long way since that time.
Yeah, they sure have. Anyway, back to the ghosts for a second. Is it also possible that near-death experiences, where people report seeing the light, is something tied to the brain? Or is it more metaphysical?
You know, I think in 2017, we can't say absolutely. And it really comes down to individual opinion on that. And people are very, religion is a very sensitive subject. And it's a subject that's deeply held. And, like, for example, both my parents have passed away now. And... you know, I would hope that someday I would see them again. And it's a very emotional subject. And it's just very difficult to... I get frustrated sometimes because I see a number of TV shows and there's just very ambiguous things going on in the show, or there's a noise over here, or there's an electromagnetic spike over there, and it's, oh, there must be a ghost. And I just think to myself, this sometimes puts into a bad light the 1-2% of the cases that are really interesting and really deserve scrutiny and that I can't explain. And then people might say, well, I'm just throwing that all together and lumping it all together. But there is phenomena out there that I cannot explain and science cannot explain in 2017. It may be paranormal, whatever that is, supernatural, whatever that is. There is some type of pattern there, and who knows what that is. And I don't, as a scientist, I don't want to be arrogant and say, gee, none of that could be something else. That there has to be stuff out there we don't fully understand
sure.
yet. The question is, what is it, and are there spirits of the dead? And I'm sympathetically skeptical, but I really want to believe, what is it Carl Sagan said? Wherever we have strong emotions, we're liable to fool ourselves. So we have to be very careful. My other motto is, when you hear the sound of hoofbeats in the night, first think horses, not zebras.
I think reindeer. And let me
especially
ask you this. As a scientist, you wrote a couple books about Bigfoot. Why?
Well, because people were seeing Bigfoot around our farm in Whitehall in upstate New York. And a Pulitzer Prize-nominated anthropologist who was living near us befriended my brother Paul Bartholomew, and they went out and they investigated cases, and we wrote two separate books on that. Now, I'm a sympathetic skeptic. I have to see the body. I have to see the fossils or the bones. But one thing I'm sure of, in tiny Whitehall, New York, where I grew up in those surrounding communities, my brother Paul and I went out and we interviewed a lot of local people who claim to have seen Bigfoot, and police officers who I went to school with. These people were telling the truth that
yep.
they saw something that they could not explain, and they were adamant. They were absolutely adamant that they saw this large, hairy, ape-like creature. And I believe them. Yet, at the same time, it's such a conundrum because there's no body and there's no fossil record of ever seeing these creatures on the planet anywhere in that area.
Well, and what we don't know, Robert, is whether there was some wacko in a suit in a gorilla's outfit or something like that running around the countryside. That we don't know.
But, you know, the police officer I was talking about, there were two of them. I went to school with them, and this was in the dead of winter, I think it was about early February of about 3-4 decades ago. We investigated this case, frigid, early morning hours, and they said this creature walked across the road about 7 feet tall, ape-like, and made like one stride, and it was across the road and ambled up the side of a mountain near East Bay. I mean, that is just physically impossible for a person in a suit to have done that. So then I'm left with, on the one hand, there's no fossil evidence. There's no body that's ever been found.
Right.
On the other hand, I went to school with these guys, police officers, honest people. They were shaken.
Yeah, you could see it in their eyes, Robert. They're not lying.
So what's going on?
Something's happening. Stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment and take the promised phone calls with you right here, including Skype, by the way, at George97313. You can pile in a Skype question, too, with Robert Bartholomew. We will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Also, don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. It sure is, and our special guest, Dr. Robert Bartholomew, will come back with our final segment and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, a couple live stage shows coming up next year. Of course, lots of them coming, but the most immediate ones, Saturday, March 10th in Salt Lake City at the Janae Wagner Theater. It's going to be a great live event. Looking forward to that. Special guests, songs, you name it, a full show. Full information at coasttocoastam.com and our carousel reel. It's probably the last button. You just click that and it'll pop right up. Or you can call the box office at 801-355-2787 in Salt Lake City, or their website, which is artsaltlake.org. Then in Scottsdale, Arizona, on April 21st at the Virginia G. Piper Theater, a live stage show, all brand new guests. You'll love it. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com or call their box office at 480-499-8587 or scottsdalearts.org. And welcome back to Coast. We're back with Dr. Robert Bartholomew. Robert, we're about ready to take calls here with folks lining up for you, but back to the Bigfoot story for a second. Since you interviewed, of course, friends, people you went to school with, and you had that conviction that you saw in their eyes, on their face, that whatever they saw, they believed it. What's your gut tell you about what you think they saw?
Well, you know, we have to be careful. I always like to tell the story of the 1938 War of the Worlds broadcast, when between, 1.3 and 1.7 million Americans were frightened after listening to a broadcast about Martians invading Earth.
Yeah, panicked, panicked.
People actually looked up and saw what they thought were Zeppelins in the sky. They described on the radio these heat rays. Well, people actually called police saying they could feel the heat rays. They described poison gas. People were choking, coughing, calling the police, saying that they were choking on the poison gas that they heard described on the radio. There is a history of, goes back to Europe, of wild man sightings. Whatever this phenomena is, it's fascinating. It's global. It's in New Zealand. It's in Australia. I mean, they're seeing it in the middle of the country in 100-degree temperatures in Australia. They're seeing it all over the world, the Alamos in Russia, the Snallygaster in Florida. To me, that's the fascinating part of this, that, yes, some of this is misperception. There's a variety of phenomena that are interspersed here, folkloric phenomena. But the real question for me is there something else there? I can't see Bigfoot as a physical phenomena. People say, like in the Finding Bigfoot show, they're out there trying to find a real flesh and blood body. I don't think you're ever going to find it because there's no fossil record. If anything, it's something other than that. Maybe some type of projection from our evolutionary past because of our fear of monsters. People talk about interdimensional creatures, ultra-terrestrials. I don't even know what another dimension is. All I know is that I think that's more likely, as bizarre as it sounds, than a flesh and blood creature, because with all the guns and the hunters in the United States and all the Bigfoot sightings, somebody would have shot one and would have dragged the body in and actually confirmed it. I know people claim to have shot it, and then somehow the body got away, but it just, the law of percentages, it doesn't... you know, I'm just in two minds. I'm thinking out loud here. As a sociologist, I need the body. I need the fossils. I need the bones. I need the DNA evidence. But as a human being, I'm fascinated by it, that all these people around the world keep seeing these large, hairy, ape-like creatures. Isn't that fascinating?
It's fascinating. They're all very similar in appearance. You know, they're all tall. They've got this certain look and gait to them when they walk. It's an amazing story. It really is. Let's go to the phones. First-time caller, Steve in Seattle, Washington. Steven, go ahead.
Okay. See, my wife passed away about 12 years ago.
Sorry to hear that, Steve.
A ghost. And she was no ghost. She came right after she died. And she appeared by me. My dog saw her, and she was dressed in white. She came down, she touched my wrist, and then she vanished. And the second time I saw her, she came into my room. She looked around, didn't say anything, smiled at me, and left.
How soon after she passed away, Steve, did that happen?
Well, the first night she passed away, she came in.
Okay.
And then it was about, I would say, 6 years, and she appeared again.
Does she appear as something physical, or can you, like, put your hands through her?
I never tried, but she was physical because she touched me.
You felt that?
Yeah, I felt that.
And the fact that it's been a while now, she hasn't come back. What do you think has gone on? What do you think has happened?
I think she just wanted me to know that she was okay.
She gave you that closure, I bet.
Yeah. Well, what happened right after that time she came into my room, And this is, you know, I've worked in mental health. I know it's real. I know it's not. And what happened was, and this is really going to sound weird, but our Holy Mother came in. She smiled at me, covered me up, and left. And I've had her presence around me for 3 times. And I was gone for 3 days and came into my room, or came into my home, and I had the most beautiful smell of roses that you ever smelled.
That happens a lot. Well, Robert, let me bring you in on this here. And, I mean, Steve is not lying. Whatever happened to him, I believe happened to him. Do you sense that too?
Who am I to say, just because I have a PhD, that this didn't happen, and it's very real to him. It's a very powerful, life-changing experience. And who am I to say?
I mean, some would say, and Steve, thank you, by the way, for that. I appreciate your story and your candor, and again, sorry for your loss. Some would say because of the tragedy and the tragic loss of his wife that he manifests this himself. You can't rule that out either, can you?
No, and Hillary Evans, who wrote extensively on the paranormal and looked at the psychosocial hypothesis, who I wrote a book with called Outbreak, the Encyclopedia of Extraordinary Social Behavior, he chronicled a number of cases like that of what he called crisis hallucinations or crisis visions. There were cases of people on Mount Everest who were freezing to death, who saw visions of people. But when you know, when you're talking to someone like Steve, it's real. It's real to him. It's
real
a powerful experience. And I'll leave it at that.
Let's go to Lewis in Ottawa in Canada. Lewis, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Yes. Thanks, George.
Sure.
This is the first time I'm calling. And,
well, I'm glad you got through.
I'll ask you a few questions. I remember a couple, or maybe a year ago or so, 6 months ago, you have a guest who knows a lot about microwaves, so microsounds. This one guy, he was living in Arizona, and then he moves to somewhere else. You know, I don't know what his name was, but...
I think it was Roger Tulsis.
Roger Tulsis, okay. And I believe it's true. The microwaves or microsounds. See, I'm involved in the internet security at this moment.
Okay.
And I show this to my co-students because I still get an advanced course. And everybody was laughing at the moment on the course when I showed this video, whatever, about the guy was doing about his bedroom and everything. And actually was a Russian guy there. He says, no, I think that guy's crazy. But the professor came in and said, no, that's true.
Huh.
That can be true. The professor came in, you know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
He says, no, that's a true, it can be possible. Because microwaves can go through.
They can go through walls. Absolutely.
Yes, can go through walls. But actually what the professor says right now on this interview, say, well, it has to be a specific person, a specific people, and has to be a particular place. And they're not going to be done at the embassy because you're treading an embassy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the second question that I want to ask, a couple of days, the 23rd, I was listening to your radio show, whatever, it was Jimmy Page or the host who was there.
Mm-hmm, Jimmy Church.
They would interview David Wilcox.
Yes.
And then he was talking about the intercepting this asteroid. He called the Umama or whatever they called that.
Mm-hmm.
They said that they found some beings. They were really, really old, ancient beings or whatever. So they said they want to disclose everything on the webpage of Divine Cosmos to the next day. So now, the webpage is off of sight. I mean, either I can able to get in.
You can't get it. It's either slammed or somebody took it down. That's conceivable, too. I know David's been a guest and a friend of ours for many, many years, and he has his own theories. I mean, he told me 2 years ago that President Barack Obama at the time was going to make the disclosure announcement about extraterrestrials, and they were going to be on his right and left side. Well, that never happened either. So, you know, these things, like you said, Robert, you got to listen to them, you have to be skeptical, and then you have to investigate.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned microwaves, and it suddenly dawned on me what's happened in Cuba. This isn't the first time there have been sounds associated with illnesses. You had the famous Taos, New Mexico hum in the early 90s.
Well, then there are hums still going on now all around the country.
The Kokomo hum, the Bristol hum.
People are going nuts hearing this thing.
Yeah, here in New Zealand, we had the Auckland hum, which was investigated years ago, and they never quite found out what was causing that.
Either the planet is making these noises with tectonic plate movement, or there's something else very strange going on. I don't know what it is. Let's go next to JD in Indianapolis. Hi, JD. Go ahead.
Hey, hi, Mr. Norrie. Thank you.
Sure thing.
Don't you have the best radio audience show on the whole planet?
We're gifted because of folks like you who listen. You make it what it is.
Dr. Bartholomew, my question for you is, were you vindicated by what you found in that foyer thing that you paid $800 for in that Salem school thing, something about the Harvard psychiatrist? Did he agree with what you had said was the problem there?
Well, everybody just doesn't talk about it now. They you know, they have no comment, or they say, you know, it's incredible to me that this, after they did the study, which would have cost them tens of thousands of dollars, and when I raised it in the media after the study came out, and I said, look, these reports were going on behind the scenes that it was mass psychogenic illness. The guy from Harvard concluded that. And they said, our study wasn't looking at a diagnosis. We were just looking at whether environmental factors were the cause. And to me, that's so typical of the government. I mean, they're caught red-handed. They were caught in a lie, the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, and they refused to own it.
That's frustrating, isn't it?
It's infuriating, and I'm still out my $800. But more importantly, what I have done is I published an article in a major medical journal on it, and then I published two more articles in two more peer-reviewed journals on it, and I've raised it on one of the most powerful radio programs in the country, which is Coast to Coast.
Mark in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. You're on with Dr. Robert Bartholomew.
Hi, George. Hi, Dr. Bartholomew. I got a couple instances from the Bible that talk about the existence of ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
When Jesus, after he rose from the dead, he returned to the upper room where they had the Last Supper, and the apostles were still hanging out there. And Jesus walked through the doors. He didn't open the doors. And then he stood before them, and they thought he was a ghost. And he took a piece of fish, and he ate it, and he said, "See, I'm not a ghost." He was trying to show them that he was a physical being.
Right.
And then the apostle Peter was let loose out of jail by some angels, and he went to visit his friends after he was let out of the jail, and they thought he was still in jail, and he's knocking on the door, and there's the lady going to answer the door, and she says, "It's Peter." And the people that were back in the house said, "No, it can't be Peter. He's in jail. It must be his ghost."
Huh.
So I believe ghosts are associated with physical beings, and Jesus even attested to that himself.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that the spirit world exists. I happen to have been a believer in life after death. And I think, do you think, Robert, it's human nature to want to believe in life after death?
Absolutely, and I think that's why communism has been an abject failure, because it tried to, expunge that from the human experience, and human beings are spiritual creatures. When you quote the Bible and cite the Bible, I get concerned sometimes, because it also said in the Bible about the four corners of the earth, and people use that literally to argue that the earth was flat. These scriptures were written down so long ago, it's hard to know exactly what happened. So I'm just cautious mm-hmm. when it comes to that.
I get it, to be sure. Now, do you live in New Zealand full-time, or are you just visiting there?
No, I live here full-time, and my question for you, George, was when are you coming down here?
Oh, gosh, I'd love to do some shows down there. Maybe we can work that out, huh?
It's beautiful down here.
It would be interesting indeed. I've never been to Australia. Robert, have yourself a great new year with you and your family, and let's keep in touch, okay?
Okay, and thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And his website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, where all his works are still available. Up next, cosmic space. That's where we're going, and you're going with us.